Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler here with you today. Excited to be here with you. And finally, I have my co-host back from the islands of Hawaii. He says he's got his mojo back and he's ready to rock and roll. Matt Sorensen in the house.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had a refreshing trip to Hawaii. I don't know how you could go there and not get refreshed. So I'm going to be extra refreshing today on the Refresh Your Wealth show. I did miss this show, I have to say. Wednesdays just aren't the same for me without this show. You know, some days this is one of the times Mark and I talk is during the show, and it's just good to joke around, give some tax and legal strategies. I look forward to it in the week.
Yeah, it's fun. This is one of my favorite times of the week. And we had Jerem with us the last couple of weeks, who was pretty cool. It was fun to have him. We did a couple Super Bowl questions. Matt, are you up for telling us who won Super Bowl 10? Do you have that type of knowledge?
The Bulls?
Like Chicago Bulls. Yeah, there we go. See, that's what you get with Matt. You're not getting that NFL wisdom of Jerem Ferguson.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and I think the MVP was Michael Phelps.
Yeah. I don't care. Michael Phelps was the MVP of everything right now. So, yeah, you could get away with that one. Guy's amazing. 20 gold. Hey, by the time some of you listen to the show, we'll probably have two or three more medals.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is great. We're excited for today's show. Welcome to all you new listeners. Here we talk about your tax strategies, business planning, legal planning, just trying to bring it all together. We know it, how hard it is to bring that American dream to real for some of us, and making ends meet every month and paying the bills. We all face it at every economic level. We've got to do more to put money aside, have emergency funds, save more on taxes, protect it from a lawsuit. That whole equation is what I teach in my workshops this fall. I have a little 6-step program. Matt and I teach it in all of our consultations. It's so, so important. And today we're going to be talking about the business aspect, 10 types of businesses you can build after 5 p.m. And Matt and I have said this many times, and that is, don't quit your day job right away if you want to dip your toe into entrepreneurship. Take your time. Start to facilitate something and build something on the side until you could either create extra income or maybe you do leave your full-time employment. You don't have to quit your day job to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's the practical method. And so many businesses have started that way. So many large businesses today started like that. So, every great band started in a garage, you know, they didn't go to the studio first. And I mean, so, this is a little throwback because I love rock and roll.
That was a great analogy. Every band started in a garage. That was good. See, you got your mojo back. I just verified it right there.
Just been listening to a lot of rock and roll. Apple started in a garage, Microsoft, if you've heard of those companies. Of your next business. This is the garage band business or the basement business or whatever. You know, you need to go get the storefront out there and everything. That's what I love about today. We got Sujan Patel, who is a marketing superstar, going to be our guest on the show. He wrote a really great article on Entrepreneur that was on Entrepreneur Magazine about 10 types of businesses you can build after 5 p.m. And so we're going to be really quizzing him and trying to get some of his knowledge out to you guys. And I'm excited just to learn something today to improve what I'm doing.
Yeah, I love it. And if you guys remember, a month or so ago, we had some young entrepreneurs on our show, and we interviewed a 14-year-old, a 17-year-old, a 19-year-old, and got some practical tips from these young entrepreneurs. And it was so inspirational. If you haven't listened to that show, please go back to it. And that's kind of, again, the common theme of wealth building. But here's why our show is different. And this is why all of you listening, please share this with your friends and family and business partners, because a lot of people get together on a show and talk about making money and starting a business, but they don't have that tax background of a real accounting firm, CPA licensed, telling you what you can deduct and what you can't and how to structure it. And then on the legal side, someone like Matt Sorensen, that's got the self-directed IRA experience. He's been consulting business owners for 15 years, and he can teach the asset protection pieces. So we really try to add that depth of real licensed professional knowledge behind the scenes. And each year, Matt and I set up, right now in our firm, we're setting up 1,000 companies a year. And when we meet with these clients, we're learning, and we're going to share that with you. So it's powerful.
I want to jump in and say, and because, you know, we got this tax and legal side of things, we always want to throw out some tax and legal tips. So, Mark, I don't know, since I've been gone so long, I'm happy to do the honors first here.
Okay. All right. Now, here's what we're doing today for tax and legal tips. Every week we do one tip that might wow you and share and try to share something that'll help you. So what we're choosing are two questions we couldn't get to in the open forum last week. Now, the first Wednesday of every month, we're doing our open forum show. It's a live, this show's live right now. We've got a number of people listening live right now on their phones, listening on or watching on the computer. We're not watching. We don't have live. We did Facebook Live last week, Matt. I was on live Facebook during the show. We'll be doing more of that. Yeah, it's cool. So we've got a couple questions, and folks, if you want to participate in the live open forum show, mark your calendar for the first Wednesday at noon Mountain in August. In September. I can't believe I'm saying the word September. Save up your questions. And it's really a fun show. Okay, so Matt, I've got a question for you. And yep. I've got to close this out and come back here. So, all right, here we go. And I think it wouldn't be appropriate if we didn't introduce the legal tip without our jingle.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. So Matt Sorensen, this is from Chip. I emailed Chip back and told him we'd cover it in today's show. So hopefully Chip's listening, and I'm sure he'll catch it at least on recording. He says, I'm age 58. I have a corporate 401k that I max out each year. Now, that probably implies that he's putting in his maximum contribution of $18,000. I'm not sure what the match is looking like. He said, I made $6,500 in after-tax contributions to the traditional self-directed IRA for 2015 and 2016. So apparently, Matt, he maxed out his 401k, then came back to the home plate and put in another $6,500 in an IRA and didn't get a deduction to do that. He says, my current balance to invest is around $30,000. Now, I presume that that's in his IRA, that he has $30,000, because if he's maxing out a corporate 401k, he's probably leaving that alone at work. I'm trying to decipher this a little bit for you. So he says, I have additional after-tax money as well that I would like to try to invest via the self-directed IRA. And he says it's possible to add, say, here's the real question. He goes, I've got $30,000 also outside of my IRA. How can I get that into my IRA? Is it possible to add it to my IRA in any way, shape, or form? I'd really like to combine the two. So Matt, what would you – ooh, it's a tough one, right?
Yeah, that last one, he kind of threw me there. But let me go back to the first part of that, which I think is a really good question, because it's a strategy I actually do myself. And I'll try and answer this one, which could have two different paths. I'll try and answer it both paths quickly. So the first part is, this is a lot of people, and this is a cool strategy that I've seen done in a couple different variations. This is new, actually. There's some new strategy to this. Let's say you have the corporate 401k job. You're maxing it out. You're working for a large company, and you got your $18,000 in, and you're putting extra money in, which it says he's doing. Now, there's two ways you can put extra money in. One, some plans allow you to do additional non-deductible contributions into the 401k itself, or he could be doing additional non-deductible contributions into a non-deductible traditional IRA. Now, the cool thing about either one is you can convert those additional non-deductible contributions to Roth. Now, this is what is called sometimes the backdoor Roth IRA for high-income people. I do this backdoor Roth IRA. So if you're going maxing out the corporate 401k, you're putting in as much as you can for employee contributions, your company's matching maybe or they're not, doesn't really matter for this question. But you're like, you know what, I still want to get more in. You can still put in the annual contribution limit, let's say $5,500, and that'll go into a traditional non-deductible IRA. You don't get a deduction for that $5,500 because you already maxed out the total deductible contributions you did in the 401k, but you can still do $5,500 in an IRA. It's just non-deductible. Well, the cool thing is, since it's non-deductible, just convert it to Roth. You didn't get a deduction for it, so convert it to Roth. You don't have to pay tax to convert. So that's what's called the backdoor Roth IRA. Now, the backdoor Roth IRA is a little tricky. If you go outside of some of these facts I was giving, the outcomes change. The best place to go is there's an article. It's literally on my desk. It's the best resource, the definitive guide to the backdoor Roth IRA. It's by Jeff Levine. He's a CPA. He was one of the editors of my book. He's Ed Slott's technical guy. If you look him up, you'll see he knows what he's talking about. But that's a great resource for the if you want to do the backdoor Roth IRA. So on this question, this additional money I would probably say just convert it all to Roth you've been putting it into the IRA, because it's likely there won't be any tax on it if you were doing it right here, and you could be self-directing that as all Roth dollars.
Yeah, and I, Matt, could I add something on the back half of that question of his? Because I think this is great for everybody else to hear too, if I may. Is that, Chip, once you've got some Roth money that you, or traditional, whatever, you know, you maybe use a combination of Matt's strategy or convert the whole thing to Roth. Awesome. Love Roths. And also, let me just make a note. Matt said 5,500, and some of you out there will hold it. Your fact pattern said 6,500. Well, that's because Chip is over age 55, so he's allowed to put an extra 1,000 in. So here's the beautiful part of this. You can create an LLC, a self-directed, special purpose IRA LLC. There's all sorts of terms out there. We've been creating these LLCs for clients for over 10 years. You can take your after-tax money that's not in your IRA and put it in the same LLC that you have your IRA money and put those into the same LLC. And there's the prohibited transaction rules that we walk you through on what you can and cannot do. But now, instead of having $30,000 in an LLC, you can have $60,000 in an LLC. You might do hard money loans, tax liens, some rentals with non-recourse loans or seller financing notes, or buy some low-income housing outright, buy 3 mobile homes, pray for a tornado, and get 3 brand new ones. I mean, you could do a lot of cool things with that LLC. So I think, Chip, you're really a candidate for a consultation with any of our attorneys in our office, our whizzes on this topic. Of course, Matt's the expert, but all of us could help you design an LLC and probably coordinate all that. And I want to say one last thing. I recorded a video last night really emphasizing to everybody out there listening, maybe going, why are they talking about these IRAs? I don't want to do IRAs. Hey, folks, to build long-term wealth, you want a well-diversified plan. You'd like to do a little 401k. You'd like to do a little IRA. And I want you buying a little rental property on the side. I want you to have an emergency fund for rainy days. We're doing a little of everything, folks, because you don't know what the economy is going to throw at you. So we're not saying put everything in your 401k and IRA. And we're not saying avoid them and go buy real estate. Find a combination. There's a real power and synergy because if you didn't notice, we've got a couple very unique presidential candidates, and who the heck knows what's going to happen to the United States in the next year, 2 years. We've got to diversify our wealth.
Yeah, and if you look on just on the retirement plans, keep in mind there's $27 trillion of wealth in the United States in retirement plans. For those that have been successful, that is one of the largest concentrations of wealth is in retirement accounts. So those that have made it and done well, it's been using those retirement accounts. They save as they go. They're tax advantaged. They're the best place to earn income and grow wealth. So I'm not going to apologize for talking about it, Mark. I know you do, but I love the topic. Obviously, I'm the geek on it. So what can I say?
Well, there's a lot of people out there with preconceived notions. I had a phone call with a client yesterday that's selling everything and putting it in gold because they're one of these doomsdayers. And we've got to be careful. We can't go to any one extreme. By the way, Chip wraps it up. He's out of Texas. We were talking about NFL last week with Jaron Bergeson, and Chip does say, for the record, Cowboys will probably be another 8-8 year. Jerry Jones isn't putting anything on the field. I prefer to watch it live. I'll be watching it from the big screen. There you go, Chip. We probably completely agree with you on that one. Okay, so we're going to jump over now to a little tax tip. And for those that are just joining us, we're going to get to our special guest here near the bottom of the hour. And we're going to be talking about 10 types of businesses you can build after 5 p.m. But until we get there, we hope to wow you with a couple tips.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Now, this is a really fun question that I got in the show last week. And it's a tough one. And so I had to punt it to this week. And it's a little challenging. So one of the first... It's two parts. The first one is, Mark, what about an irrevocable trust for my IRA? Should I be investing in an irrevocable trust through my IRA? And this is a very I'm really glad this question came up. This is Josh. And that's a very dangerous statement. So here's what's happening out there, folks. When you go to self-direct your IRA, you really have two options. But there's a third one that's kind of sold out on the streets in the ghetto. And people are opening up their trench coat, trying to sell you something else they think is better. But the two main options are you're just going to work directly with your custodian. You're going to take your IRA, roll it to a custodian. We've got multiple ones we can recommend, different pricing policies and procedures and styles. We'll help find the right custodian for you. And then you work directly with the custodian and invest in what you want. You call us once a year to get kind of an update on your tax and legal strategy, you're fine. The second option is you want a little more control and flexibility and autonomy to invest in what you want to do quickly. So we set you up in an LLC. We combine multiple IRAs, just like Chip, we were talking about outside money, inside money, sister's money, mom's money, wife, husband. We can put together a really cool LLC with a bunch of retirement money, and then you can go out the front door with your checkbook and start investing in what you know best. We give you the guidelines and rules to follow. Folks, those are your two main options. But you're going to be walking down the street, and someone's going to be in an alley and go, psst, psst, come over here. I want to sell you something else. This is great because you don't have to call a law firm and we could do this real cheap and you're off and running. And you're like, ooh, I want to hear this. So you walk down the alley and this guy opens up his trench coat and he says, why don't you use a trust? Now, this happens all the time in the streets of LA because in California, LLCs are expensive. And so these self-professed gurus who get up on stage and say, just create a trust and then make your IRA the beneficiary of that trust. You can open a bank account in the name of the trust, and you're off and running. And you've now sidestepped all this crap with LLCs. The problem is, folks, is you are still personally liable for all the decisions you make when you invest that money inside a trust. You haven't created any asset protection for yourself. That's where the LLC comes in. And so the trust can be a misdirection or a kind of a half-truth. So be careful of that. And heaven forbid, and this is the main answer I wanted to give Josh, you want to stay away from the irrevocable trust. Oh my gosh, you would never want to do this irrevocably, because how can you create an irrevocable trust where the IRA is the beneficiary. I haven't even heard of that happening. So be real careful when you go down that path. Matt, anything you'd add to that concept?
Yeah, the irrevocable trust, that'd be impossible. I don't know, that could not work. I don't think of the guy opening the trench coat with the watches. I think of the guy popping the trunk in the alley. They're similar guys, but the product's the same. The garbage is the same. I think this is just really almost a consumer protection tip of who to work with, and seek out licensed professionals. I mean, even once you get into that realm, you can still find some unqualified people, but at least they have a licensing credential and a licensing body, or hopefully malpractice insurance that you can rely on, because you'd be surprised at how many things we see in our office of crash and burn from people who did something from some guru that's costing them tens of thousands of dollars in fees set up and tens of thousands in taxes and penalties because they set it up wrong. I mean, it's scary how often it happens.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm going to hit two quick last comments, my dear listeners. This is really a variety of concepts and points that are exciting. I feel like I'm on the Dave Ramsey Collins Show, and we're hopefully rocking your world, helping you along the way. We're going to jump to our guest here in just a few minutes, but there was a couple follow-up questions that we couldn't get to last week. One is, are REITs a good investment strategy? Let me just say REITs, that's a real estate investment trust. There's going to be a minimum of 100 partners in a structure like that. The returns could be very similar to a mutual fund, and you're not going to have much control at all. And they can sometimes be difficult to sell out of. Now, if you want to diversify your portfolio, I'm not a big fan of doing a REIT. I would rather see you set up your own holding company and do some real estate with some real estate professionals that can manage your personal real estate. I think you're going to get a lot more bang for your buck. So be careful of REITs. Matt, final word on REITs from you.
Yeah, very expensive fee wise. A lot of money comes off the top. Why not just buy real estate direct, cut out the middleman and all the fees? There's seriously like a 5-10% commission to whoever sells you the REIT.
Yeah, be cautious. Second, last comment, and this is from Julie, both of these. She said, is term life insurance a good investment strategy? Well, Julie, you're speaking my language. I know I offend some insurance agents out there, and let me be clear about this. There is a place for whole life, universal life insurance where you have cash value. This is the infinite banking strategy that some of you may be sold, that you need to invest in insurance and then you can borrow from it and the money grows tax-free and blah, 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 blah. And it works. Technically it works, folks. But I really want to make sure that my client is financially stable enough to maintain those premium contributions in any sort of financial turmoil. You do not want to start jumping into long-term, whole life type insurance planning and infinite banking when you're just getting started. You need a foundation financially, because if you can't keep up on those premiums and there's any disruption in your life, then that policy fails and your whole infinite banking fails. And the only person that won in that is the insurance agent. So I tend to lean towards the term and invest strategy. Get some term. Julie's talking about a $1 million term policy for 10 years. It could be there to cover, she said, debt on property, replace tax liability on the sale of property, help maintain a spouse's income. I love it. Do term, maybe even make it convertible so you can change it to whole life in the future. But for 90% of people out there, term is all you need and invest. Once you're strong and stable enough, then go look at the whole life. It is certainly a good investment strategy if it fits your economic plan. There you go. Matt, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say when someone says insurance, don't think investment. And that's kind of what the whole life and that infinite banking is. They're trying to mix the two together. Insurance to me is insurance. Something happens you can't pay for. If we're talking about life insurance here, that's going to provide money for funeral expenses, family members that have to move on without you, debts, whatever it may be. But it's not an investment. Use the money that you'd otherwise have to pay for these whole life policies to otherwise just go out and invest. I separate the two things. Don't lump them together. That's why I love them also.
Yeah. And I know that there's several listeners, thousands of listeners out there that'll catch our show that are in whole life policies or are whole life insurance financial advisors at some of your major traditional brokerages, whether it's Northwestern, Edward Jones, Merrill Lynch, and they are really mad that we're saying that.
New York Life. Yeah.
New York Life. Yeah. I'm not saying that life insurance is bad. And I know Matt is not. Once you get to a financial place in your life where you can maintain that policy with all the ups and downs of life, that's great. And we love to meet with clients and help them in a long-term infinite banking insurance policy strategy. But when you're just coming out of the gate and you don't have those financial resources, I don't think it's healthy. And a good life insurance agent would say, Mark, you're right. They get oversold to people that really shouldn't have them. So anyway, that's where we stand. Okay. So Matt, do you want to introduce our guest again? I know you mentioned his name. We're so excited for this. Go ahead.
Yeah. We have Sujan Patel. He's our guest today. And as you guys know, we're talking about 10 types of businesses you can build after 5 p.m. Sujan wrote an article about this on Entrepreneur Magazine. But this guy's he's kind of a big deal, really knows his stuff in marketing. He's got a great website, which you can get to. We'll provide links to. Sujan, you with us?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for that warm welcome.
Yeah, and we need to point out he's also the author of the book, 100 Days of Growth. And Matt and I both know how much work and time and effort and passion goes into writing a book. So we want to definitely make note of that. And he's written for Forbes and Wall Street Journal and all sorts of outlets. So Sujan, tell us why are you passionate about entrepreneurship? Tell us about yourself. Why is this so powerful to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just instilled in my blood. My mom and dad and my family are kind of small business owners, entrepreneurs, kind of grew up with it. And frankly, 9 to 5 is great, but it's fairly boring. And I like to go further and do more than just go to work, go home, and repeat, right? I started doing a lot of, work outside of work to start making some passive income. And really, it wasn't even for passive income. It was more for I want to see if I can develop my skills further or just kind of get ahead faster, right? So at the end of the day, I was like, I want to go faster and move forward. And 9 to 5 was only able to get me so far, or during the day, I could only get so far. So I started putting in hours after work, and I discovered like how easy it is to actually make some passive income. And, it could be as little as a few bucks. It could be, tens of thousands. But it was funny because last year I did the math, and 60% of my income came from 20-30% of my time, pretty much all the stuff I did after hours. And I thought to myself, oh man, I have a really big decision to make because I love what I do, but the math just doesn't work out, So it's that point that made me realize the article and write the article.
Well, I want to jump into this article here. And I want to say too, if you guys go to Sujan's website, Sujan Patel, Patel.com, it's an awesome site, lots of good resources there. I'm sure you'll give a shout out later on here about what people can get there. But what you can just see really quick is he really speaks our language, and I think a lot of our listeners will really appreciate it. So let's jump into the article. I think Mark and I were prefacing this maybe before you got on that we love the concept of this 10 types of businesses you can build after 5 because we love the concept of people not feeling like they got to jump in 100%. I got to quit my job. How am I going to quit my job and start this business on, how do I do these things? I still need income. And we love the concept of after 5, you can do both. I mean, whatever type of business you want to start, most of them you can do after 5, at least get them pretty far along. So we love this after 5 concept. So maybe you can give us a little preface on what you've seen. And from your experience, we know you've worked and helped, business owners do marketing in this after 5 concept, maybe an example of someone that's kind of done this after five work. And we'll start getting through some of the points in your article.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think one of the most notable persons that has done actually built a 6-figure business within under a year, doing this on the side. And it's a friend of mine, David Dana Servin, he made this beef jerky shipping business, a subscription beef jerky subscription, which you wouldn't think is like a big deal, right? It's called stickinabox.com. I remember when he first told me about the idea. Come on, like, that's a pretty, like, it's a pretty narrow idea. I mean, who's going to buy meat online, right? Like, or like subscription jerky. And, you know, 6 months later, he's like, I did this and that. And it was all part-time. It took a few hours. He found, like, sourced vendors. In the beginning, it was probably not that profitable, but good just to get the business and the word out. He kind of sourced really expensive vendors, and they kind of, like, figured out how to get, like, cheaper shipping, cheaper this and that, and optimize the business. The next thing you know, this thing is generating some serious cash. And so, you know, that's a really good example. I mean, for myself, I did the same thing twice, actually. So when I was working, I was doing – I'm in marketing. So I started doing consulting on the side and just helping out people for free first. And then over time, I just had, like, a website that just says, hey, like, hire me. And it's just kind of my resume. This was early on in my career. Mm-hmm. And people hired me. And essentially that was the start of my consulting business that turned into – you know, multi-million-dollar business, 30, 40 employees, and I sold it. So, I mean, look, starting small is always the key, and it's like, just do it, don't talk about it. It's really the thing, and leverage what you know.
Yeah, and before we get into these 10 types of businesses, because I know many people listening are like, well, I don't know what to start. I don't know what to do. And so I know Sujan's going to give you guys some ideas here. But I want to say, as a precursor, one of the best ways to succeed in small business is to do something you're passionate about already. So when Sujan starts to go through these types of businesses, think of, what do I love to do? What am I passionate about? What's my hobby? What would I do even if someone didn't pay me? And then figure out how to make money at it. And that is I think something that'll get you out of bed in the morning. It'll, when you get home from work and you're tired and you have dinner and you're like, oh, I'm just going to turn on Netflix. No. You're going to sit down at the computer and work on your website. You're going to work on your marketing plan. You're going to send some emails. You're going to do some product development out in the garage. And I think if it's something you love and are passionate about, it's going to make success so much easier. So just have an open mind. No one's going to tell you what to do. You get to choose. So, Sujan, tell us some of these types. Yeah, what do you think? What do you think about these types of businesses and passion and how it plays together?
So I think the first one is like food and beverage, right? So think about like, are you good? Like, are you passionate about making cupcakes, right? Or like, are you brewing beer in your basement and like, this is what you do for fun? Think about starting a kit. Like, I have a friend who's a web designer by trade. But he loves brewing beer. That's what he does on the side, like for fun. And then he figured out some like awesome brew, and he started selling how to make it. And it was just like this, like $50 package. So think about like, can you actually package what you do for fun, food wise, and would people buy it? I mean, you know, go beyond like door to door type things. And there's lots of markets out there that there's farmers markets and things like that. Another person I know. I just met him at a marketing webinar or seminar I was doing. He does a hot sauce business. So, I mean, like, it doesn't have to be that complicated. And ultimately, kind of the next thing is to sell what you know, right? Like, if you're passionate about something, you know you're really good at it, start selling it and teach people how to do the same. And it's never been as easy as it is now to do that, right? Like, there's sites like Udemy and all these e-learning websites. That you can essentially just put together a quick tutorial on how to do something and sell it. Now, the trick with when you start doing, like selling educational products is put the outline together, put everything together, make a really good video to like introduce the information. But you don't actually have to do the hard work, the educational video, until you get people to buy in. I remember early 2015 when I wrote the growth hacking book, 100 Days of Growth, I actually didn't write a word of the book. I just wrote all of the marketing copy and started pushing and promoting it and selling it until I got about 1,000 sales. Otherwise, I was just going to refund everyone's money and say, sorry, I screwed up. But it motivated me to get the sales, but it also the sales motivated me to do the hard work. So it doesn't always have to be all that hard work. And I mean, the other thing you could do just
Before you keep going, let's just keep that. And you haven't been on our show before, so we want to be really practical and stay on a track here. So forgive me. Let me interject before you hit 3 or 4 points, because you hit some great stuff there. But the first industry you said was food service. Okay, so before you went into information marketing, which is another type of business, on food service, I really want to just and I like how you brought video into the equation, which is another topic as well. If I may add, just I think this food service idea is wonderful, because I've got clients that do cookbooks. They have food websites. We've got a client in Hawaii doing cupcakes right now that I've been working with, Da Hawaii Cupcakes. Go Google it. They're wonderful. Give them a little shout out. But there's some great things you can do in food service, and it can come very naturally to you. And you can build a great – now, this is where video comes in, because I like what Suchan is already saying. If you're going to do in a food service, one of the first things you got to start doing is buying a camera, which is a tax write-off. You could buy a lot of technological things you're going to need to get this business off the ground, which are going to generate tax write-offs, which can generate tax savings against your day job. See, guys, here's the big picture. You're finding a business you like. You're starting to create expenses for crap you're going to buy anyway. So if you're going to get on a website and buy some cooking product and cooking supplies, that's now going to be a deduction in the development of your business. And now you can start a YouTube channel. You should be videoing what you're cooking and how you're cooking it, or your product and what it looks like, and taking a video of your catering experience, taking pictures of your food product. So you've got all these fun things you can be doing. And like what Sujan said, is you're building that passion, that excitement that starts to snowball. So when it's time to sit down and do some of the hard things, you've got the energy and excitement to do it because you're feeling it. You're feeling it. So I don't know. That's my food service comment. Anything you guys want to add to that?
Yeah, well, I think the passion really, really plays off. And whatever it is to get you passionate, to get that motivation snowball started.
Yeah. And Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want to kind of focus on this. And, you know, you've got this list of 10 things I know, which is, you know, it's kind of like, here's just 10 quick ideas of ways to be thinking. But maybe before we hit some of these other ones, which are kind of more just specific ideas and ways to routes to go, you know, we've got like, you know, apps, develop, learn how to develop apps. Do you like music? Give music lessons, services for pets. And, you know, there's all these little things that you can go down, but
let's list those 10. Let's list those 10. Let's do it. And then maybe we,
let's just hit those and then talk about how you bring them together.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Sujan. The floor is yours. Number one was food service. Give us 9 more freaking awesome ideas to do after 5 o'clock.
All right. So the next one is really around educating and teaching and selling what you know, right? So there's lots of sites like Udemy. Online learning is becoming more and more common these days. There's lynda.com. There's all these sites. But Udemy is a great example of just getting your content out there, creating a video, creating the guidelines of your course. And frankly, by doing this, you're going to get better at what you're doing in the first place. You're going to get more knowledgeable because you have to prepare it to be taught to people. And these sites have networks out there. I mean, you could teach sewing lessons. You could teach anything. Don't worry if it's too niche. They have large communities and groups where people are generally interested in this. And you can give it away for free in the beginning and build momentum from there.
Yeah, I think with those types of things, these are awesome because if you can find a way to make money on what you know and selling that information that also is marketing you as an expert in that industry, but then the next thing you want to do is have something to sell. So not just the education itself, because I think where this becomes powerful is, let's take the sewing example you gave, you know, if you're great at sewing, then you teach these classes online about how to sew certain things. But you don't want to just be selling the classes. You got to have some other product that goes with what you're selling. What do you like to use that makes you better at sewing? it doesn't have to be a novel product in and of itself that you create, but maybe it is, you know, sewing and you've got patterns, or there's certain stuff you may buy in bulk that you resell. But if you build that following and you become an expert, don't just worry about selling that product or that education, but also try and find product that goes with it. Because I think long-term, that is an excellent way to really maximize on the brand you're trying to build and the information you're trying to educate.
Great comment, Matt. Great.
Go ahead,
Sujong.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, Sujong, go ahead and also roll us into number three while you're at it.
Yeah. So that's a great point you made. You can sell products, or even if you're not selling them, let's say you know a place that's selling them, like let's say it's Amazon. You can give your information and education for free and say, hey, here's the 5 products I use, and use affiliate links so that you get a commission on the sale. Now, you can even say in the videos, full disclaimer, these are affiliate links. I will make some money. But if you're giving value and you're teaching people, let's say, sewing, and other people are passionate about it, they're going to buy your products or the products that you recommended. Mm-hmm. They're going to use it because you're probably teaching on them, and you make money there. So there's products, attaching products is a great way. And I think that kind of brings me to the third thing, which is it is entertaining and kind of educating, right? So we talked about like online courses and like teaching people your skill, but let's say you don't have a specific skill, but you're funny or you have a personality. And I think the two of you guys on the show right now, I've been listening to the last couple episodes, and you guys are dropping some serious knowledge, and it's entertaining at the same time. So podcasting is another great way to essentially make money, right? You're creating an audience and a user base with value and entertainment. And if you, let's say you don't have the knowledge, but you're an aspiring comedian and you want to get connected to other comedians, well, great. Start a podcast, reach out to local comedians, reach out to all your favorite comedians, maybe start like kind of the mid-tier, like the smaller guys, and ask them to join your podcast. And not only do you build a good connection with these comedians because you're making them look good, you probably learn a lot, and then you also teach it for free, and then maybe you can get some advertisements. So I just talked about podcasting and probably doing something you're passionate about and making money or adding value in multiple ways.
That's love. I love it. And you know what we call it, Sujon? Edutainment. So
edutainment. Love it.
All right. You're awesome. Thanks for that compliment too. Okay. What's number four on the list?
Yeah. So it's social media, right? So it's managing social media accounts. Everybody needs a social media account. If you're not on Facebook, you're not on Instagram, and you're a local or a small business, you need to be on there. Why? Because your people making decisions to purchase things are on there. And so as a small business or as a big business, anyone, any size you are, it's time consuming, but it's also not immediate ROI, and you probably don't even know what to do. So that's what people usually hire freelancers through Odesk or Upwork or many, you know, freelancer.com or many other places. But if you are one of those, like let's say you're a millennial, let's say you're in college and you want to make some extra side money, or you're particularly savvy with Snapchat or Instagram, offer, you know, provide your service on Freelancer and you can get hired to do these things. And it doesn't sound like much money, but you can charge $500 to $1,000 a month and get 10 clients, and there you have a six-figure business. So it's not that hard, and all you're doing is managing other people's social media accounts, and essentially you can build a big business off of this.
Yeah, and that's something that's so in demand. I think this is, you know, some of these are really insightful, actually, just in my own experience and, you know, owning our own business, the law firm, and, you know, we're doing other things too. But there's a big need for that, I think, for business owners and for the millennials out there. And sometimes I get lumped with them, but the millennials out there, they love, you know, social media. And I think it's going to only become more and more important, more and more valuable. And that is going to be like, you know, that's going to be a huge job of the future, is managing that, because it's really where people are making decisions now.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to add that I'm sorry there's three of us here, so there's someone's always trying to get their nose in. But I was going to say at our firm, I hire probably someone – we've got several outside vendors right now that we pay through Upwork that we discovered through Elance, and we think outside consulting and the resources out there on these websites are awesome. And if you have a skill or a talent, that's a great place to get it placed. Suchan, what were you saying? We got to move along here, so I got to push you along. You were saying pets, which is a huge industry. What were your thoughts on pets and the small business industry in that area?
Yeah, so I mean, first I think it's just offering like grooming services, dog walking services. You can build a legitimate business by just walking people's dogs before and after work, right? So think wake up a couple hours earlier, sleep a couple hours later, or eat, you know, maybe eat dinner a little later, and handle the pet situation before and after for other professionals. And it's a great way essentially to maybe do what you love, and it's frankly not that hard, right? Throw a website out there, maybe you sell it to your if you're in an apartment or condo building or your neighborhood, sell it to your neighbors. Hey, I'll take care of your dog for, you know, X amount of dollars, or some sort of grooming service. But again, you can get started fairly easy. And then reality is that snowball effect will kick in and you'll figure out exactly how to scale it.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. I've got two comments on this. This is huge. First of all, we've used this type of service before, is do pet sitting for people. If you already love pets, you can get pre-screened and people can hire you to sit and watch pets on the weekend and make almost an extra $50 a day just having an extra dog or a cat in the house. We've used there's all sorts of apps out there. Rover.com, which is pet sitting and dog walkers, dog vacancy, in-home dog boarding, and there's NARP. There's so many. WAG. Get out there and look at the apps available, and you can get on a list to be providing. And there's a huge demand for this. Also, guys, you're going to love this idea. This is a guy that was in my office I met with and who was looking for a job, and he's a huge entrepreneur. In college right now, he was doing a rent-a-dog service. He'd get six puppy labs. As soon as they were weaned from the mom, he would take these six puppy labs, and he was renting them for $30 an hour around campus. You would line up and rent one of these puppies for $30. He goes, Mark, I was booked out 2 weeks straight. People would come by the apartment, pick up a puppy, and play with it for an hour and bring him back. And then people, of course, within that hour said, I got to have this puppy. And then after the semester, he would sell every one of the puppies at three times the cost because everybody just was dying for that puppy because they had rented it multiple times. So he was like, Mark, I was going to need a three-time markup on my puppies. I was renting them hourly, and I was making over $1,000 a month with these five puppies. And then at the end of the quarter, I unloaded them. It was just an ingenious little idea. And he's doing it again this semester. It's crazy.
Yeah, I love that idea. And I got another one that my kids got into. You know, what they've done in some of the local animal shelters here is they've got volunteers to come in and help play with the animals, get them outside. They take them to a park. The shelter helps with some transportation, and they give you some basic stuff to play with the dogs. And it was cool because, you know, they get into the like, almost like a dog park type thing. It's enclosed so that they can't get away. But they really try to make an experience for the people that wanted to volunteer, because it's not just about making money. I mean, for some of you out there, this is, hey, I want to supplement my income. But some of this stuff, too, just improves your life. And if you have a passion about pets, some of these novel ideas have just been cool about how to, you know, they're basically getting people involved to help volunteer, improve the lives of the pets that are in these shelters. And it just got more volunteers out there who were wanting to help and wanting to play with the pets and the dogs that were in the shelter. But I love these topics here. What other one do you want to give, though, Sujan? The last one that we haven't talked about here that you feel you just got to drop on us today.
Yeah, I think the last one is kind of in line with the podcast and the education is blogging, right? Blogging is such a powerful way to not just capture an audience, teach people, or make money, but it's also a good way personally to vent, to write down your thoughts, to kind of get it out there. So you kind of feel like for me personally, blogging is it's therapeutical, and I get so much value from it. But you could also you could also make money from it. You can build your brand, build an audience. And all it is blogging about what you're good at. And that may be something as a hobby, or it may be something that you do professionally. And just, again, educating, or as you guys said earlier, entertaining and educating. I can't say the word. I can't say what you guys said exactly.
It's trademarked, but yeah, just so you know.
So I can't use it. Okay.
You're good.
It's a great way to kind of do multiple things, and frankly, repetition with blogging, you're going to become a better writer. It's probably going to help you in your professional life as much as it is going to help you make money in the short term.
All right, and I've got to add two more here real quick, because I think you alluded to this early on, and I don't have the article in front of me. I had to go to a different location for our show today, and I apologize, Sue John, but I want to get out there. You mentioned entertainment, and then at one point you mentioned music. I thought music was a great one for those that want to give music lessons, or you're passionate about music. You've got to figure out ways to make money at it. Is also recreation. I just want to say the industry of recreation. We've got an employee in our office that does part-time fly fishing guiding. He does fishing guide services. He also has a website for fishing product and fishing services. And this is, again, where Amazon reselling can integrate into all of this. And Sue John, that was a great insight that you made. A lot of people don't realize that when you're on, you can create your own site and do your business and also tap into the Amazon machine, that Amazon monster. And if when people buy product through Amazon, I'm sorry, on Amazon through your site, you're making money at it. And so I think recreation is just another huge area that's got to be talked about. So great comments, Sue John. Any final words or suggestions? And I've got a couple more insights that I want to hit before the show's over here after Sue John departs us here. But Sue John, any final words, and how do people get to your book and your article and what you'd like to send them to?
Yeah. So if you check out my site, sujanpatel.com, SUJNPATEL, .com, I share everything I know, do a lot of videos and whatnot. But ultimately, you can read, you can learn all the things you want in life, but you have to execute. And I think that's what my blog focused on. But I think if you start doing that, and that's going to help you really start to make that passive income, which hopefully turns into something more. And that's kind of what I want to leave everybody with.
All right. It's kind of a just do it strategy. Well, I love it. And thanks for being on. We really appreciate it. We'll get your link up in the show as well, so people can find the site more easily. And we'll stay in touch too. Maybe have you on. I want to talk about your other book as well, just on growth. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sue John.
My pleasure. Thank you.
One other one that was interesting is we have thinking of in the pet industry, we've got an employee of ours. I was going to say client, but an employee of ours that got inspired through Stephen King's novel Pet Cemetery. Anyway, she secured property to open her own pet cemetery because after their pet died, they realized what a racket it was and how it was difficult to bury your pet. And so,
yeah.
I'll leave it at that. I mean, that's just something you could do in any part of the country. She's like, Mark, you can't tell someone to steal my idea where I'm at. And so I won't say where she's at and what she's doing. But but I thought that was a great idea, a little pet cemetery, you know. I recommend
it. Ideas.
Throw it down. You know, throw it down.
That's fine. I think it's fine. Just throw out some of these fun ideas. They're just different, you know. And I think a lot of people don't realize, really, you can do a business in that. I mean, we have a client that just helps people sign up for hunts. You know, I mean, I'm not a hunter, but apparently it's somewhat of a complicated process to sign up for particularly high demand hunts, and there's a lottery system and it's paperwork. You got to do a lot of stuff. They create a business, Hunt and Fool, which is one of the main focuses of it, is simply just signing people up to hunt and to get permits and licenses at certain spots. And that's a totally novel idea. Who would have thought there'd be a business for that? And that's a decent sized business too. I have another client, you know, I've had a couple over the years recently doing the food truck. When we were talking about food, I was just going to jump in. I mean, food trucks, that has been a booming business out here in Arizona. It's really popular. And I had one guy doing churros. There was a friend of a friend of mine, you know, out of a food truck. As a churro lover, I was very happy for that. But you see them everywhere. And I think, as we talked about earlier, and this will just be my final comment, is try to think outside the box, and think of some of these things that you're like, man, this thing's going to be a business. But if you've found a need for it yourself, someone else probably has too. And if you've searched out there to try and find a service for it, or product for it, and you couldn't find it or anything adequate, then maybe something you should start doing. And that's what I'll leave today, is just thinking what to do after five.
Yeah, and Matt, you may make one more comment, because I want to finish up here. We got a couple minutes left. Is it, as you're thinking of ideas, Matt, you said something insightful. Someone's probably done your idea already. And this is where franchising can come in. We got to get into that word in a show like this.
Yeah.
And I want to give a shout out to Entrepreneur Magazine, who is a huge partner of ours. They love us. We love them. And on the entrepreneur.com website, there's an entire section on franchising. And they have an annual a magazine article dedicated to franchising. And you can look at businesses that you might be interested in. And the franchise fee could be quite nominal. And it's like getting a business in a box. They give you everything you need, all the promotion, marketing material, support, and they may take a 5 or 10% royalty, but you've just saved months and months of development when there's a franchise business ready to go. And that could be a great fit.
Yeah, and a lot of those franchises have a brand, and you know, there's coordinated efforts that really help you as a business owner. And there's pros and cons in going franchising. It's great for a lot of businesses. And I have a lot of clients that own a lot of different franchise businesses, different restaurant chains that are, you know, different brands that I'm somewhat surprised at how well they do. So it can be, you know, very valuable. Don't get too caught up on the franchise fee. As much as it is what is it? And I think, as you said too, with the franchising, Mark, too, is that's something you can really focus in on. What do you like? What are you passionate about? You know, and think of the things we talked about. Find the industry you're passionate about that you maybe you have a hobby in, or you're otherwise a big consumer in, and maybe look at a franchise in that market.
Yeah, and I just love this show, because I get so excited about thinking of ideas, and hopefully we've inspired some of you to launch a small business, change the business you're in right now. If it's not working, hey, don't be emotionally attached to it. Remember, I've said this before in some of my weekly messages on the newsletter, be flexible. And I want to say this too. Finally, we meet with clients every day. They're like, okay, I got my idea. What do I do next? This is where a consultation with any of our attorneys can be helpful to decide, should you set up an entity, should you not? How do you open your first bank account? How do I get my merchant account going? All those questions we can help you in a consult. And I'm also launching, as many of you have already seen on my website, my 10 steps to starting a small business, which is going to have close to 20 videos, and it's going to be included in my tax and legal library. And for those of you that don't have my little video series, this is coming out within the month, because so many people are like, I need to practically understand the steps to start a business. And you'll be seeing that come out. So stay in touch. We'll continue to view our newsletter, the deadlines, the tips and strategies, both of our blogs, SDIRAhandbook.com, markjkohler.com, and they all coordinate with kkoslawyers.com. We're there for you. We love you guys. Matt, take us out. Any final encouraging words for our entrepreneurs out there?
No, but just thanks for being on the show. It's good to be back. And keep in mind, if you listen to us on iTunes, we'd love a 5-star review. We always send you out a free book if you give us a 5-star review and let us know about it. And we read them on the air. So look forward to being with you next week. Stay calm and refresh your wealth on.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's eBooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.